Awesome to welcome University of Rhode Island women's basketball coach Tammy Reese to the basketball podcast. Reese has led the Rhode Island women's basketball program to unprecedented success since becoming head coach. In the 2022-23 season, she guided the Rams to a program record 26 wins and their first ever Atlantic 10 regular season championship. The year prior, Rhode Island posted 22 wins, marking the first time in program history the team achieved back-to-back 20-win seasons. Under her leadership, the Rams advanced the WNIT Super 16 in 2023, earning two postseason victories for the first time. Reese was named Atlantic 10 Coach of the Year in both 2020-21 and 2022-23. She was also recognized nationally as the ESPNW Coach of the Week. Before arriving at Rhode Island, Reese served as an assistant coach at Syracuse, Cal State Fullerton, San Diego State, and Virginia, contributing to multiple NCAA tournament appearances and conference titles. Her professional coaching experience includes roles with the WNBA's San Antonio Silver Stars and Utah Stars. In addition to her collegiate experiences, Reese has also been an assistant coach for Team USA's 3-on-3 squads, helping lead them to a bronze medal at the Olympics and a gold medal at the World Championships. Hey, coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you really know which plays, sets, and actions are working for your team? On offense, how valuable are paint touches and post entries? On defense, do you get more stops playing man or zone? Like high-level college and pro teams, you can use an analytics system like Hoopsalytics to get data-driven answers to help guide your in-game strategy and practice emphasis. With Hoopsalytics, you can track any action or set and see the resulting points per possession. Plus the video link stats, you can view your successes and fails and see if it's a play design or execution issue. And you can easily build organized film sessions from these video clips. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball. today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free. Coach Reese, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on it. And I really appreciate you having me, Chris.
We're excited to talk to you and so much experience in your coaching life and doing great things at Rhode Island now. And first thing I want to get into a little bit, I've been exposed to your program a little bit through one of your assistants, Jen Fay. And it was wonderful to get that insider access. And one of the things that she mentioned on there was the value of the player-coach relationship and that you're just great at empowering and motivating players. So maybe talk about that philosophy and maybe some of the ways that you do that.
First of all, I'm going to have to give Jen Fay a raise. No, everything, the reason I coach, my why, is because I had an unbelievable, every coach in my life has been unbelievable for me, but my college experience, my head coach was such a great relationship coach from on the court, off the court. It was like a second mother to me. And so my high school coach, my train, anybody that ever taught me or mentored me, it just, they're still in my life today. Some over 50 years, some 30, but because of the relationships, and I would run through a brick wall for any one of them because they loved me. They could coach me hard. They could coach me easy, but it was all based on the relationship. And so it was so successful in leading me to be successful, whether it was as a player or a coach. And so I tried to just emulate that. What my predecessors taught me was everything's based on relationship for me. And we're leaning more towards a business now here, but I never want to lose my why. And that's to develop and mentor young women and to be in their life forever. And so for me, that's what it's all about. It's the number one when anyone comes into our program is our culture, and it's built on relationships.
I love that, and I love hearing that. And one thing that's been told of me about you is your energy and enthusiasm every day. And you just showed it right there. But how does that actually come through every day for you and around your players?
What's funny, I was taught from a very young age that everything you do, if you don't give 110%, then don't do it. Don't show up, don't come, don't do it. And it's what my parents taught. It's what my teachers taught. It's what my coaches taught me. And so I believe in energy. I believe what you put in the universe, you get back 10 times fold. And I wake up every morning. I do my little mantra. I read my quote for the day, my little what gets my day started. I drink my energy, my horrible concoction of my cleansing. And then I start my day with a great workout after that. And so by the time I roll into practice, my juices are flowing. I'm ready for the day. And I don't believe in energy vampires. And so if I'm going to, you walk the walk. You don't just talk the talk. So when I show up, if I'm 55 and I can have the most energy in this gym and I've been up since 5 a.m., then the least you guys can do is show up and not be an energy vampire. And so that's another big staple of our program is the energy. It's about giving outside of yourself. And so for me, it's how I start every day and how I like to finish every day is putting great energy, positive energy into the universe.
Let's dive a little deeper into that. Of course, you're coaching human beings. So sometimes they have days where they don't have as much energy to start with sometimes. So what are some ways that Coach Reese can get them to get back to the energy that they need to be effective for your program?
When we start every day, and there's a video board in our practice facility and in our arena, and there's four things on there that you must bring every day. And it's communication, it's hard work, it's culture, and it's compete. And you may show up one day and you're not feeling well and you're given as much as you can give. That's where the teamwork comes in, is this person's only got 65 in the tank. They're injured, they're hurt, they're sick. They failed a test, their boyfriend or girlfriend broke up with them. So they're struggling today. That's where, don't worry, baby, I got you. And then she's got you and she's got you and we just pour into you. Not everyone's gonna have a perfect day, but what we ask is, you don't just suck and distract us and take from us and drain us, that you let us build you up. You let us get you through the day. And therein lies the give and take, the yin and the yang, the balance of not every day is going to be a perfect day. And they're not old enough yet to understand how to control that. The coping mechanisms haven't been taught yet. And that's the other thing we try to teach them is you may start off on the wrong side of the bed. By the time we get you out of practice, you're feeling pretty good and you got a smile on your face and we flipped you. We flipped the script on you. And so that's the goal. And we understand that not everyone has it, but therein lies you've got 13 and 14 other teammates who do. And we just keep pouring until we fill up your cup.
I love that. What a great answer. And one of the underrated parts of coaching that brings you so much happiness and pleasure as well is being able to do that and impact humans at that level. You mentioned culture. And I think one thing that has helped you have so much success at Rhode Island, we mentioned those 20-win seasons and the number of things that hadn't been done there before, was your defensive pride, your defensive focus a little bit. So talk to us about how do you teach defensive pride so it becomes a part of your culture?
Growing up, from a very young age, you're taught offense is very skilled. To be an offensive player in anything, you've got to be pretty skilled. And it takes a lot of practice, a lot of it. And some people aren't great at it. In basketball, it's shooting, it's dribbling, it's passing, it's footwork. There's a million little skills that go into it. And when I was young, the first thing they taught you in defense was it's a lot of pride and passion. If you play harder and you just get into people and you do things other people don't want to do, you can get on the basketball court without being able to put the ball in the hole. And in women's basketball, a lot of times there's some kids that don't have a lot of skill. And so there's some teams with me that from day one, if we can't score, or we have a problem, then we're going to have to stop you from scoring. And that's how we're going to have to win games. And from a young age, I was always taught defense wins championships. And if you can defend, you got a shot at winning a game. Even if you have trouble scoring the ball, if your kids are all in defensively and rebounding, both, which a lot of kids don't want to do, you have a shot at being good. So even when we weren't very talented skill-wise, we could still win basketball games because our kids bought into the defensive end and our kids bought into every day working hard. That's a non-negotiable. You show up, work hard, and compete. If you do those two things, you can play defense. I can teach you the very basic skills of defense, angles and things like that, but you don't need a whole lot of skill. You need a whole lot of heart. And so that's why we've always been good defensively. No matter what happens on the offensive end, our kids buy into that because it's our belief system. It really is. And to win a game, you're going to have to get a stop.
What a great segue into your defense. A little bit more in-depth look at some of the tactics and some of the philosophy of your defense that has led to so much success. So maybe first give us an outline of the general philosophy of your defense.
What's funny, I really stole it from UConn. You
Good
know,
choice for all of us, right?
you don't want to learn from losers. You want to learn from the best. I had a friend, one of my former UVA teammates, Tanya Cardoza. She has 10 rings. She worked for Gino when they won 9 in a row, and she's back there now working for him. So I used to go up and watch. I'd go to all the practices I could back in the day when I was playing in the Dutton. Didn't matter when, I always respected the way they did things. And so even I would call Shea Ralph and Tanya and I say, listen, talk about transition defense. Send me everything you've got on your defensive principles because they're very skilled offensively, but they also play great defense. And so I adapted from transition defense to our half court defense. Other than the run and jump, where I stole from Huey down in Houston, all my half court and transition principles are Gino led. And so our philosophy really is no easy baskets. So transition is no layups, no open threes. We want everyone to take mid-range contested jump shots, and we finish every possession with a box out. Very simple. It sounds simple, but it's not. Half court defense is make people uncomfortable, pressure, force the ball to sideline end line, have great help defense, no open threes, no layups. The mid-range is what we want, contested mid-range to a box out. Everyone moves on the string. Great communication is the focal point of all our defense. You should hear everyone talking, and we finish every possession with a box out so we can run. And so that's our gift is we get a stop, we hold them. Now we get to go play out and we get to score very quickly, throw our press on and do it all over again. And trying to teach that every day from breakdown drills to the shell is something kids don't think, but we love shell drills. And we used to do 50-50 offense and defense. And I've changed my philosophy, where now I focus a little more on offense. I think people pay money and people want to see scoring. They don't want to see games in the 40s. And although we still put great pride and emphasis on our defense, we're going 60-40 a little bit more with our offense. We think it's a little bit more important. And we can hit home the same defensive principles within our offensive segments as well. Not that I won't say defense doesn't still win championships, but watching the game, after last year scoring some games where we just couldn't put the ball in the hole, I went out and recruited skill. I went out and recruited offensive players. And we can scheme enough to set up great defense, whether it's great help, whatever it is. I think I'm a good enough coach to do that. I flipped my philosophy, if you can believe it, but it's where our focus is a little bit more on putting that ball in the hole.
I can believe it, coach, because you've coached for a very long time and you played for a long time. So great coaches adapt, great players adapt. And you're showing that with that. And I'm curious, when did that shift for you happen? Was it just this year or is it over the last few years?
You know, I think it's been over the last few years. I think when we were best, we analyze at the end of every season. I sit down, I analyze myself, my staff, our team, our recruiting, what we're doing, and where do we want to go, and how good did we do the year before. And after last year, it's been 2 years in progress. But we won the championship in 22, 23. And when we did that, we had highly skilled players that could pass, dribble, shoot, great IQ for the game, a feel for the game. We had great 3-point shooting. We could spread the floor, great spacing. And then lastly, we were deep at every position, too deep. Great competition every day for minutes. They were fighting for them. And so those three things, when we looked back and we won the championship, and we were a very good basketball team. And they played defense, but they were really good offensively. It was really hard to stop us. And so when you couldn't score after three or four, we'd get a kill. We get three stops in a row, and we just scored, hit three threes in a row. Suddenly, it was like night and day. Last year, I had enough. I couldn't watch another game of the 40s where we're shooting literally some games 13% from the three, 60% from the free throw line. We're missing bunny layups. We can't make a high-low pass. We literally can't make a high-low pass, so we can't run a lot of the stuff we want to run. And so I had enough. And I said, listen, we're going to go get skill. We're going to go back to the drawing board and we're going to get kids that can pass, dribble, shoot, and really shoot. And so whatever we decide to run, we can put that ball in the ocean and we can get the ball where it needs to go because we can pass. And that was our focal point. And then we went after kids, whether it was freshmen or whether it was the portal, that could do those things. And then the second thing we went after was great 3-point shooting, but then multiple kids in multiple positions, versatility. So we could go 2-3 deep in every position and they could actually play. They would get on the court and play. And so really tried to emulate 22-23 season and why we were so successful. And then go back to the drawing board and reinvent. And that's what we did this offseason.
I love the psychology of you sharing that. So thank you. And it is fascinating because, in a way, what you're saying is if I get a skilled player, I can account for their defense and I can find a way with the scheme or the tactics or the motivation to be able to get them to be better defensively. But we can't teach the skill and we can't catch up on the skill no matter what in a year.
No. And especially because you got to coach for a year. You don't know who's staying. You don't know who's coming. You don't know who's going. So if you are ahead of the ball game offensively and you just get great players, I could roll the ball out if I had Jordan, Pippen, Kobe, Shaq, and Timmy Duncan. I could just roll the ball out and we'd win games. Why? We have more skill than you. We have better players. Players win games, not coaches. And so if you don't know what you're going to have next year and you don't know who's staying, you better go out and get players for that 1 year, freshman and transfer, that are pretty skilled. You know what you've got to be able to run an offense and score. Defensively, we can trap, we can hard hedge, we can go zone, we can go 12 or run and jump. We can do some things to disrupt. We can go pack line and really help and buy. We can coach that. You don't have enough time in the limited time you have these kids, these young women, to be able to teach skill. I'm going to take a 15% 3-point shooter and make them a 35% in the 3 months over the summer. It's not happening. You're lucky if you get a 1 to 4 or 5% increase. That 5%'s unheard of. 3%'s pretty good. So if a kid can't pass with their left hand or can't dribble, it usually takes a good 6 months to get them adapted at even a regular left-handed layup and an outside hand push pass. So again, go get skill. And if it stays, now you can build on it. If it goes, don't replace it with someone who can't do what they do, that kid, that young woman could do. Again, different philosophies to adapt to the portal, to the month NIL, to all those things. So we recruit and coach for a year with the in mind, retention is the most important thing. Retention of staff, retention of players. But if it doesn't happen, you've got to have a plan B. Where, what do we have to do to get where we need to go? And that's our philosophy now.
It just shows how the game has changed so much with the portal and everything that goes with it. But also, I love that you connected your philosophy here on more offense to your fan base and the engagement of your fan base, which I know is something you've done really well there as well. So talk about that a little bit more about how you've engaged your fan base.
It takes a lot of work. And this is where now my other teammate at Virginia, Dawn Staley, if you see what she's built at South Carolina, when I talked to Dawn and I was taking this job, and she just said, Tammy, you got to get out every day. You got to be present on social media. You got to get out in the community. But the most important thing is you got to put a great product on the floor that is fun to watch, that wins, and then build the great atmosphere. But it's got to be a great product and people have to enjoy coming and watching it. And so the first thing was, how do you want to play? Do we want to play in the half court, call every set, score 40 points? And you think fans enjoy watching that? They don't. Boy, when we're running up the court, hitting the three in 3 seconds, pressing, turnover, kick out, another three, it's just the arena. It just blows the roof off the Ryan Center. The energy, it's electric. Everyone's jumping. And so we want to play fast. We want to play furious. And we want to play with passion and it's fun. And that translates right off the court. It just does. And that's the type of game that our fans enjoy watching. They do not enjoy watching the slugfests of who's going to score 40 points first. I don't want to watch that. And I'm a coach and it's my team. And so if I don't want to watch it, I know they don't want to watch it. Even the most loyal fan, we all know we have our like when you're awful. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm a Yankee fan right now, or I can't believe I'm an Oakland Raider fan, whatever it is. But man, when you're good and you're playing a certain way, and that's the way is our fans enjoy. It's fast paced, it's fun, and we're going to give it back to them this year, similar to a couple of years ago, how we played. I think our goal was almost 43s a game and 20 plus turnovers, turning the other team over, and then a plus 12 O boards. So we're getting about 30 more shots per possession, 25 to 30, and then points per possession. If we get a steal and it's a free possession, instead of getting a two, let's get a three. If it's a high percentage shot. And so working that San Antonio system where you're maximizing every possession. That's how we want to play.
You don't have to speak to this necessarily, but the things I'm thinking about as you're saying these last two things, especially, are how much it should dictate development at the younger levels and how still so many states don't have shot clocks. So there's not as many possessions. The game isn't interesting. The game isn't exciting. And I'm glad I'm not the only one that says, sometimes I don't enjoy watching basketball because of the way the game's played. And it's not the kids' faults. It's the way we're administrating the game. It's the way we're coaching the game. And again, the coaches are smart. They're taking advantage of advantage. No shot clocks. We're going to play slow. We're going to defend. So we've got to change that so that the kids get these development experiences. But back to your point, also so they're more skilled. The more touches they get, the more skilled they're going to be for you when they get there.
Chris, I don't even get us started in grassroots programs. We grew up back in the 70s and 80s. You went to camps and you actually learned skill. Like you learned how to dribble, to pass, to shoot, to box out, to play defense. And you had to go over those skills over and over. And then you played. Then you implemented it into a 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 5-on-5 situation. And then you played AAU and you went away weekends every now and then. And there was value in winning. Now we don't have that. I'm not even talking high school yet. And all you do is play games. And the premium is win, exposure and win. And so now the kids don't go to camps as much. They get trainers and they play with cones and one person teaching them a skill. They don't go out and play pickup anymore till the lights go, till 1 in the morning, till the lights shut off. They don't go on the asphalt and just learn how to play the game. And then you just hit on high school basketball. Half of the states don't have shot clocks. High school coaches aren't the middle school feeder systems to JV to varsity. They don't have a unified teaching program of what system are we running, what skills are we teaching. And so it's a little bit in disarray. It's why you see Americans are athletic, and now Europeans who are coming over in the WNBA and the NBA. And they're so skilled. Like, how many jokers do you see here in the United States? Or Lucas? Or, and they've been playing pro since they were 14, but they are skilled because they are taught offensive skill sets, pass, dribble, shoot. And they do it at a very high clip. And I see it all the time because I coach 3x3 basketball. To go over and watch the men's Serbia team is the ball never hits the ground.
It's
It's
incredible watching it, isn't it?
Amazing. And you go, oh my God, these guys are so very skilled. They understand the game. They know how to play with each other. Their reads are amazing. But they teach that in Europe. And that's why Europe is catching us. And they are. There's no doubt about it. When we go to the Olympics and we're just beating teams, if Steph Curry didn't hit those shots, we wouldn't have won the gold medal. And 92 Dream Team beating teams by 80, 100. Now we're neck and neck. What happened? That's my question. Same
Well,
thing. We almost lost to France, the women. I was in Paris. I was there. We almost lost to France. And so, what is happening and why the shift? And you hit it on the head. You combined all those things, and there is a complete, really teaching lack of skill on where we need to go, combined with our athleticism, because we have unbelievable athletes here in the United States, but our skill level is not growing, meaning our athleticism. It's not taking us to the pinnacle on where it should.
I love this, coach. You're saying a lot of things that I will echo in my role with the NBA and Nike in trying to transform the landscape. And it comes back to that. Just kids, it's not better or worse. It's just kids learn differently nowadays. And the game-based model, we're in control of that more than we realize. We're, as a parent, I know it, being in the grassroots, parents just want to be told their kid's good. They don't want to have their kid actually get better. And that's really a struggle, I think, for all coaches at all levels. But anyways, let's get back to your program. You and I can have a whole conversation about development, and I'd love to because, again, I'm on board. We're not going to develop a Jokic because we never let a big player catch it in space and make a play. We just don't let them touch it in space. It's all rim rolls and, yeah.
We stick them right on the post because you're the tallest guy.
Yep.
Where in Europe, everyone teaches the same skills. It's called
everyone's playing in space. Absolutely. Yeah.
Everyone, point guard should be able to post up. You should be as versatile as possible. In the women's game, it's why Stewie's so good. She can play inside out. Jonquel Jones, Della Don, Candace Parker, Lisa Leslie, the great bigs, Nafisha Collier now. Asia Wilson's developed now. She's guard-like skills, face up. So they're bigs. They can play 1 through 5 and guard 1 through 5. It makes them unstoppable. The men have been doing it, but now, again, versatility. Just teach kids the proper skills to be a great player, not by position, a great basketball player.
And there's no future vision, to your point, about that, too. It's like, I know a tall girl specifically who I think is a point guard, and I had this conversation with a coach and with her parents, and they're like, oh, no, but this girl dribbles better. I'm like, yeah, now, but what is she going to be in 2, 3 years is the foresight that we have, to your point, to develop a Luka. Luka wouldn't have developed if somebody didn't give him the ball and say, oh, okay, you're going to figure it out because his perceptual skills are so incredible.
Yes. And again, just teach everyone skills and you'll see certain kids, you'll go, my God, she may be 6'2", but she can really handle the ball. There's your next Magic Johnson. There's your next Candace Parker. Teach them the skills and watch them develop into a great all-around player. Face up, back to the, doesn't matter. And that's where we pigeonhole our kids.
We limit them, don't we? Yeah.
And we don't let them grow and enjoy the process. And because we want to win. Because we want to win, I need this kid to bring the ball up because she won't turn it over. Right now, you'll turn it over. And you're 6'3", so go down on the block and just post up because we want to win. Is that best for us or is that best for our players? It's best for us.
And back to your point, like, because we're playing games all the time and we're not practicing where they actually get more touches in a game-based way to account for the fact that now they're working with a trainer. So they don't need the individual stuff as much as when they come to practice, they need some of that free play and that unstructured play that you used to get and I used to get in the playground. It just doesn't happen the same anymore.
No, and that's why, you know, the kids, they can't make reads. A simple coming down, quick help across early, you got to get off the ball. They can't make that read because all they do is cone drills and dribbling drills and they don't know how to play with anyone. Where we grew up, we were hooping with the boys. That's just a simple read. And as coaches, they can't pass to the post. They can't make an entry pass. Passing is one of the worst skills in women's basketball right now. It's horrendous. And again, because they don't play with others constantly, they're always doing individual work with their trainer. And then after that, they don't go play on playgrounds or pickup, or they don't practice. And now they can't practice that skill with others. And now they just over dribble all the time or ball dominate. And that's, as a college coach, it becomes so frustrating when you get kids in. That's why we value IQ and the ability to play well with others. Like when we see a kid that just comes down and makes the right read and gets off you're like, oh my God, thank you. We call it the Sue Bird. Oh my God, she can Sue Bird. Oh, and it's a lost art. It's a lost quality, which used to be just a given. Everyone could do it. Very few can do it now.
I couldn't agree more. And we got a chance to watch Kelsey Plum live last week. And yes, she can do the sensational thing, right? But 90% of the time, it's just she gets off the ball so quickly and makes the right decision so quickly. Back to your Sue Bird reference. And again, not valued at a young age, so not reinforced and not developed. And that's something that we can account for, I think, in development. But at least coaches think that Coach Reese is just saying that. When Jen Fay presented to us the 3-2-1 offensive simulation, small-sided game, and different things within that, you're doing these things in practice to help players get a little bit of freedom to be able to make decisions within the structure of what you're trying to build. So maybe talk to us more about that, because that's a great example for coaches to go see what you're talking about in terms of trying to account for this.
It's funny. I watched Jen's podcast and she had a lot of her Quinnipiac video and stuff
Too
on, but
much, right, coach? Too much.
no, it was great. It was great. But we do the same thing. We're installing, we're teaching, we're going back to our motion offense. And really, all motion is, yes, there's some structure. However, it's all reads. And so we show up, we just are breaking down first day of practice today. We show the whole so they know the spots and roles and all that good stuff. And then you got to teach. So a little bit of structure where now the here's the different things you can do. And then secondly, we simulate with coaches the reads. So we're showing you why you do it and you're going against coaches. And then the third level is now we play. So now all bets are off. And now you guys just get to read. So we've shown it, we've drilled it, then we've gone against coaches scripted of why you late cut or sneak drive or curl cut or what it pop behind. And now you play live. And now can you implement all our breakdown drills into a small-sided game of the right reads and playing with each other? And we go over and over it. And then you go strong side, then we go weak side action. Then eventually you bring it all together. And now you're playing five on five or fours. But the small sided, the three side and the two, the small sided games are so important because you've got to give them the ability to read without the hole going on. The smaller the read, and then you open it up to now I have not just this side, I've got to read the weak side. And now not just the first action, the NBA, the next best action. And so you layer it for them. How you teach it is extremely important. And then you really can start playing and letting them make a lot of mistakes, letting them, after we've gone over it for a while, every day after we watch film, coach, I'm not getting this action. Watch film. And then they go, oh, I see now. I should have. Yes. And then we go physically do it, watch more film, physically do it until all of a sudden it clicks and they don't even have to think about it. Oh, you went under, pop back three. Oh, you went under, I shot fake, you're coming over, sweet. I got the drift, I got the weak side hammer. And now they just start making the reads and playing off each other. And so it's extremely important. We implemented it today and then tomorrow, and we're on the small sided games. We showed the whole, and now we're in our part phase. But it's imperative, especially when you teach something as big as reading as a motion offense, four around one or five around zero. And so it's been really fun and watching our kids have the freedom to decision make. We're not the little puppet masters every play, and you're just going, and when it clicks, it's a beautiful thing to watch. When you have a joker in the pinch, and they're just picking defenses. It's a thing of beauty. It's why I love motion so much. And it bucks the system. Yes, kids can still be taught how to play the game of basketball and make reads.
Couldn't agree more with all of that. And the one thing I want to emphasize to coaches is you're teaching the whole. And I think the part that we as coaches are missing is that connected part where you add the coach's guided defense and you add the coaches, because again, there's no reason to teach offense without some type of defense on the floor that helps give them perspective on what they're going to learn. So I want you to talk about that more. But the other part is obviously just the fact that you're letting them see why they're doing the breakdown or the small-sided games, right? If we do all these progressions from 1-on-0 to 2-on-0 to 3-on-0 and then build up and build up and then all of a sudden 5-on-5 and go, why don't they get it? They didn't see why they were doing the whole first part of it. So I love that part of it, coach. But maybe talk more. What does that actually look like with your coaches on the floor creating guided decisions?
You know, it's good because you've got to rep it enough where they get enough reps at, they can see what it looks like. So instead of just going dummy, I can't stand dummy. You have to do dummy sometimes because you have to just get some reps in, but and get them to do the little things first. Are they setting their cuts up? Are they communicating? Are they setting the proper screens? Are logistic things. But the scripted action is so important because now they see the why am I doing. You can just go, hey, you're supposed to curl, you pop, but no, there's a read. And so here's the timing of it. So as I'm coming off, if they're coming over the top, if they're tagging and trailing, what would you do? I'm going to tight curl, coach, and I'm going to get a catch for a layup. Exactly. Now, if they're coming on the inside and they're going below the screen and you feel that, you set your cut up and you see them going under and I'm popping back, coach, and I got my shot. Exactly. So now we're going to script that and you're going to feel it over and over. And then we'll even let the coaches now it they can go either. Now let's see if you can read it. We just got five each way. Here we go. Unscrew. All bets are off, coach. Do what you want. Can they still make that same? Is the timing good from the pass to the then it becomes live. Now you're compete 3v3. Here we go. You guys, you're going head to head with each other now. You've gotten enough reps at it. And now we don't skip a step where we're just throwing them in and defense hasn't, they have no idea why they're curling, why they're popping, why they're twirling. They have no idea. They're just doing it. And so it's that scripted action. And people love to just progress. I want to play. You don't know how to play yet. It's why you can't score. And so getting the kids to feel real comfortable with that and understanding it's a process. You can't skip a step. You can't. It's like cooking. You skip a step, it's going to taste like SA, you know what? No, we don't skip steps. Once we get it, though, we may progress quickly, but we got to have the right process. And that's why the scripted action is really important.
But ironically, you're letting your players play while they're learning is part of it as well. So what they've envisioned as play is like just scrimmage up and down, but that's not what we're saying. You're letting them play out of these situations and they're getting a chance to play. And I love that.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach, I got to ask because we're simpatico on this. 5-on-0 is the most annoying thing to me. I have to be nice on this podcast all the time because obviously a lot of people do it. And I'm not saying it's wrong because sometimes, as you said, it's necessary. But I'm curious for you, did that go back to your playing days where you did an immense amount of 5-on-0 and sometimes you were like, why are we doing this much? Or is this something that has evolved for you as a coach?
Growing up, we always played a lot. We never did a lot of 5-on-0. It progressed really quickly. We played, even in college, we competed a lot. And that's why I loved my coaches. Taught, and then boom, we went right after each other, full throttle. And every you'll take as an assistant, your learning experience through high school as a player and then as a coach, one has a different way of doing it. It's not right, it's not wrong, but for you personally, it may not align with what you believe in. You learn and you steal. You'll take, oh, I'm leaving that. I don't like it. I'll steal this. So I got to Syracuse, 2015-16. Quentin Hillsman brought me home. I got to be an assistant at Syracuse. It's the year we went to the national championship game and we lost to UConn. And I've come from places where it was compete, practices were just hell, full throttle. It was really hard. I get to Syracuse and we did a lot of individual work outside of practice. We were allowed to be with our players all the time, but practice was a lot of dummy presses. And we pressed for 40 minutes, dummy offense, dummy, everything dummy. We scrimmaged. If it was for 5-10 minutes a day, if that, half the time, no. And his thinking was, I don't want anyone hurt. We'll get in game shape as the season goes on. It was completely different than anything I had ever seen. I'm like, oh my God, the players, they were like, they wanted to play more. So off the court, we would, in positionals, we would scrimmage more and do some things like that where we got a lot of compete. Never scrimmaged. People didn't believe me. What do you mean you don't practice? I'm like, no, we walk through everything. We dummy everything. Very rarely do we ever go head to head. And we go to the national championship game, a Final Four. And we were good. And it just goes to show you, it's nothing. I was like, I just don't know how this can possibly work. And it worked. And that's why I grew to respect everyone's process. It may be a little bit different. I take some things of that where I'll dummy down some things where day before a game, I got to keep people healthy where I've injured kids. We've gone just way too hard and we've gotten hurt because they're fatigued. Again, I believe in reading. I believe in playing. I just do. And competing. I want to teach kids that. And that wasn't something that I necessarily believed in, but it worked for us.
It's incredible to have that extreme example in your back pocket as well, to be able to direct your philosophy and your thinking. And that's great. And this is one of the problems with, I think, high school and youth coaches adopting college type philosophies, because what might be good for winning isn't necessarily good for development in a sense as well. Back to some of our original conversations. I do want to hit on 3x3, coach, because it's incredible. And I think not enough Americans have really dove into it yet. I've done a few podcasts. Brian Benjamin, who is Netherlands head coach, he was on. I know the Serbian coaches you're talking about, extensively talked to them about it. But dive deep for us a little bit. Some of the takeaways for you from that 3x3 experience that has helped your coaching.
Really, again, small-sided games of they can play the game and score quickly, literally. 12 seconds. You score in 12 seconds from getting a rebound to clearing it, and you got 12 seconds to score. Smart enough to find your way into configurations and scoring without ball dom. You don't have time to dribble the air out of a ball. It's cut and pass and read. And your mind has to think the game as fast as your body is playing, which is uber fast, from transitioning from offense to defense and without, especially defensively. Without help. You're guarding without any help. You can't help in 3x3. And just watching the speed of the game, the way the players can think the game as fast as they're playing it. And then again, the small-sided games of the beauty of the three-man game and the two-man game, the beauty of reading and making the right decision and skill level. You must be able to pass, dribble, and shoot. Or you can't hide in 3x3. You all need to be able to do those things. And so you've got to be uber skilled, not only offensively, but defensively too. You've got to be able to stop, guard the ball, guard your yard, so people don't have to constantly help you. And the last component that I love about it, two things. The first is how fast it is. So the players, it gets you in such great conditioning. And then the second thing is the physicality of it. They let you play. And I mean play. Not only each other, but the elements. It could be 110 degrees, no tent, you're on the asphalt. It is brutal. You've got to have a little bit of a dog in you to be able to play that game. Because if you're soft, you're not playing 3x3. You just can't. And so you combined all those elements, and then it is fun. It's like a circus. It reminds me of playing pickup down in 4th Street Courts or Rucker Park, and the lights are on, the DJ's going, the crowds are coming, there's food truck. It is just a one big party and so much fun. And so people love playing it because it's that. It's not indoors with air conditioning and no, you got a DJ, you got the crowd, and it is one big party. That's all I can say.
I love it. It's such beautiful basketball and so fun, as you said. It creates an environment. And that's what you've already referred to many times in this podcast, about creating an environment where players enjoy it, they compete, they get better because of it. And that's perfect. Have you implemented any aspects of it, or do you play 3x3 ever in practice or in development?
We did. We started playing a little bit of 3x3 like a year ago in the summer. Most of our small-sided games, it's like we'll play for 3 minutes straight, but we haven't put those rules in to our 3v3, we call it. We haven't put them in yet, only because we just haven't had enough time. But I've played it with the team before and they've enjoyed it. It's definitely gotten them in much better shape.
And one of the most important parts of it, coaches, to dive into is it does remove the coach from the activity. The coach is not ultra involved. So if you have a hard time over coaching and you want to reduce it, play some 3x3 because there's not a lot of time to do it as their coach.
No, you got to prepare them. And this is what a coach should be. You put, players in the best position to be successful. And then you step back and you let them go. And a lot of times we have a tendency as coaches to overcoach and every little thing. And then the players feel like I'm in this box. And so the great thing about 3x3 is you prepare them, you let them go, and it teaches them how to lead. Like it teaches them to know. Having people like Sierra Burdick on our team and just a brain, she knew they're switching. We're going to do twirl action. We're running. She knew exactly what play, when they could make reads, and then they could communicate with each other and coach each other. And that's the biggest thing is watching them grow, not just from a skill level, but the things that I think this generation has the biggest problem with is communication because of this. Screen time and phones, and no one just sits and talks anymore. Just blah, blah, blah. It happens on the court a lot. Everyone says, you talk to coaches, what's your biggest Achilles heel, your detriment? What's your team not good at? We don't communicate. We don't talk enough. It's like a chore to get people to talk. Where I'm from New York, so it's blah, blah, blah. They're like, coach, you never shut up. And I'm like, I know, because that's all we had. We had four stations. We had a rotary phone, and you had to ride your bike like 6 miles to your friend's house. That's all you had was make your own fun. And it's a game that teaches our players how to do that and just removes you, which is a beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing, coach. We grew up in a similar age era, so I totally understand what you're saying about a rotary phone, and trying to explain that to my daughters
The
is
long
always fun.
cord, and
Yeah,
you
oh
go
yeah.
hide in your
And
bedroom so you
the
can.
longer the cord, the better, because you could take it to your room and shut the door.
There
I
you
know.
go.
Yeah, no, I know. That's a throwback for sure. Rhode Island, let's dive back into it a little bit. One of the things you talked about, playing aggressive defense and kind of the UConn way, so to speak. One of my curious questions about that always is help at the rim. How are we accounting for help at the rim? Because sometimes in aggressive defense, obviously, you get beat, and that's part of it, and that's part of it. So how are we covering for that?
Our philosophy is obviously we have great midline help. We put a premium and an emphasis on help and then help the helper. And it's once we're beat, we peel off and we locate. We get to the midline, we locate. So if it's help the helper and you got people screaming, you'll know exactly who to take. And so we teach that a great deal. Yes, we want you to guard your yard. God, in a perfect world, no one would get beat. But when you're beat and right from jump, that midline is help is extremely important. So again, breakdown drills of help the helper or peel offs. Sometimes we may change it and we may trap and zone it off the ball. A lot of times when we get it to the baseline, when we push it to the baseline, we may trap. So we may switch it up where you just don't know what we're going to do. But the biggest thing for us is really teaching our help and our scramble is it's usually not the first, the help. It's usually the help, the helper, and then that one more that'll really beat you. So it's just scrambling and talking and getting rematched, matched back up so we can box out and run. And so that's our philosophy is you got to have your sisters back. It just has to happen. And again, when we're all moving on a string like we should and we're all communicating, you'll know exactly where to go.
I love that. And you talked about peeling, and you talked about some of the help to help their type of situations. What are some of the cues that you're giving them in terms of when they should leave and the different things that come with that? And that seems to be, again, more of a component of modern basketball, where you're trying to cover the 3-point line and a lot more space than we used to. So what are some of the cues that you're giving them?
It really starts with the ball. It's all predicated on the on-ball defender. So if we're all, the other four are in their help positions and you make the decision when you're beat. So when you scream help and when we're pushing the ball where it needs to go, which is better be sideline baseline, and you scream help and that help defender starts to come, you leave when they're positioned, when their body is, they're on the ball and they scream ball. And you don't leave too early because they can split where you're going enough. So if they try to snake it, you can back tap. After you scream help, now comes the help rotations. Here comes across the lane midline, and then here comes the drop. And then here comes the one taking away the dunker and playing two until you peel off and grab probably the fill behind strong side. And now we're zoned up on the ball and we're matched up. And so it's all predicated on, again, communication. So if someone gets beat and they don't scream, help's not coming. So if we give up a layup, That's not their fault. You never screamed. You never said help. And you'll watch it. And I tell my kids, don't go. Don't you dare go. If they don't scream help, you better not go. I'll make you run. And they'll go, but coach, I see the ball. I'm supposed to. I need them to say it. Because in a game, a lot of times when you get sped up and you're battling Asia Wilson and you're more concerned with Wilson and you don't see it, but you hear help, you'll look. If they don't scream help, all bets are off. We won't be able to rotate. So communication defensively is huge, and it starts with on the ball. And then from there, you'll hear, I got ball. Here comes, I got help. I got the. And now we start to rotate and we start to communicate and we start to talk and get matched up.
That's an incredible example. I'm glad you shared that, of just like a logical or natural consequence. If you don't communicate it, don't rotate for them. Because why do kids not communicate? Well, because they don't see the value, because we don't create the value. You just created the value to it. If you don't communicate, you don't get help and you get beat and you're the one that gets subbed. Pretty
You know, it's
simple, right?
yeah, it's funny. Every drill, when we meet as coaches, what is the emphasis and what are we trying to teach? Not just a drill, what's our philosophy? What are we trying to teach? And we better emphasize those things, or else you're just teaching a drill. You're just letting them go. You're letting them not. That's not our culture. That's not what we do. One of our biggest things is communication. And this drill, if you don't communicate, we can't rotate. And so if we can't do step one, there's no need to do the drill. It's just a drill. There's a reason we're doing it. And again, there's a process. Every step is needed. Once you skip a step, we're in trouble. And if you skip the first step, we're really in trouble. So we really, everything we do, you got to know your purpose. In every drill, you can't just do a drill to do it. Sometimes we won't move on because we just can't do it. That's our philosophy. As a young coach, I used to get so caught up in, oh, we got to stay on top. We got to do the drill. We got to, and what are we doing? We got to do the right thing from step one to the end and know our purpose in every drill, not just do a drill to do a drill.
Well, and it speaks to, we got to get better at basketball. We don't have to get better at the drill. We've got to get better at basketball. And that's my reading between the lines in terms of a lot of the things that you're saying here, which is really connecting with me. Coach, I know you get asked a lot. I get asked a lot about communication. You've covered that part of it. The other thing I know we both get asked a lot is how to rebound better. And you referenced that at the beginning. So maybe just dive a little bit deeper for us about how you end your possessions. How do you create that emphasis on rebounding that leads to obviously your players being able to play in transition?
The best compliment I've gotten is I've actually had coaches call me and go, Tammy, do you just recruit rebounders or do you teach them how to read? Number one, how to defensive box out. And then number two, how to just annihilate the boards, pursue the basketball with a resilience and a passion that you've got we need to know, or is it a combination of both? And I would like to hope we go out and recruit. Obviously, we've always had great athletes that could really rebound, and that we were blessed, but we really do a great job at breaking it down and teaching it because we do have to end. Our basic philosophy is we have to end every possession. Who wants to guard th multiple 30-second shot clocks? Who wants to do that? Not me as a player. Damn, I'm lucky. I'll guard for 15. Let's get this ball so we can start offense. That's what every player wants. What do you want to spend your whole time playing D? No. So you have to end every possession. And we could have done some of the most beautiful basketball. And then we give up no board. And I literally vomit in my mouth. I get so upset because, again, we can't go on offense now. And we got to guard again. And usually, when you give up one or two O boards, they score or they get fouled. It's just a given. And so we drill it defensive, how we want you to box out. We don't just let them box out any old way. We teach a hit and hold method, the most athletic, where you hit side view. So you stay locked on the rim and you can see the flight of the ball. You can move your feet, much more athletic position. We do not teach the hit. Reverse pivot. A lot of times you'll hold like that. You'll get called for holding, hit and hold. And then we pursue the basketball. Track. You teach great rebounders know how to track a miss. So if your eyes stay locked and you can hold off and you can stay and track a miss, and you're already in this position where you can push off, you're much more athletic than flat-footed holding and try to release. That's why so many people can run around people and get a rebound. We teach hit and holds, and then we drill it. And then we teach offensive rebounds, whether it's the jab and swim opposite, whether it's the spin, whatever it is, we will teach multiple ways of crashing the glass. We teach triangle rebounding offensively. We must get to these three spots, our best three rebounders on the floor. Always get to these three spots and how we rebound out of the triangle. And then we drill it. And that we give O-boards every possession. When we're competing, if you get an O-board, you get more points. And so it really puts an emphasis on you're going to have to box them out because you could win a drill just on O-boarding alone. And so, again, what's our purpose? Every defensive stop today, we're tracking how many O boards we give up because we chart it in games. You better give up less than, I think it's 12 was our goal last year. And if it's under 10, really good, which we've done multiple times where we've gotten 20 plus O boards and we hold them to six. That's 14 more possessions. Plus we turned them over. So now we're going towards where we want to go and you've got to drill it. You can't just go, we'll drill teaching a box out after every possession. No, you won't. You're more worried about your offensive flow. You're more worried about, you're not going to sit there and go, you didn't box out. You didn't box out. But when you start putting an emphasis on rebounding, you'll get what you want. And again, it's not for the faint of heart. We go after people. Like you're going to hit and you're going to hold. Sometimes you're going to hit them so hard that they're not going to come in the paint. And you make a point of it. The first play of the game, you're going to crack them between their chest with your elbow and you're going to nail them. I don't even care if you get a foul, but they're not coming back in that paint and they're not penetrating where they're going to start O-boarding against us. And so that's our philosophy. It's what we believe in.
Love it, said, and love that idea. Hit them first, and they're more likely to think about it next time when they go to rebound. Perfect example of that. Coach, you've gave us so many great examples, and your passion shines through about why you've been successful at Rhode Island. And I imagine you're pretty excited for this year. You've already referenced some of the skilled players you've got, and like understanding a little bit what led to that really good, successful year. So you must be excited.
Yeah, I'm really haven't been this excited since the 22-23 season where I felt like we did a really good job in the portal. We signed three great transfers, all fifth years, two from in league and then one from a power four. And then simulated this year, very similar. We signed three from in league, all fifth year grad transfers. One actually won the league from George Mason. And so bringing in that great experience. All three are extremely skilled and can really shoot the ball. And I brought in a little bit of energy, just different personalities. I really went after some kids that just are connectors, that, simulated me, that they love, they always have energy. They're talking, they're nonstop, where our gym is just a buzz on and off the court. Our team's always together. So they're unified, they like each other. They force each other to do things, uncomfortable things that they don't all like to do. And so we're really, I love being around them because I love to have fun. I love to just let loose. You work hard and you play hard. And so not just on the court do I think we're really talented and we are offensively, but off the court, they're the kind of young ladies that you actually, if I could have them at my house every night, I would because I really enjoy their company and they enjoy each other. And so that sets the table for a successful year because I really do feel like they're all in. We're coming together and invested. We spent the whole summer together, most of us, and they all have one thing in mind. We're going to go out and win the championship and we're going to have fun doing it. And it makes for a really fun season. And that's what basketball should be. You should love the journey. And that's what we're going to do this year is we're going to have a great time winning this year.
Fascinating insights throughout this whole podcast, Coach. I can't thank you for sharing so openly and honestly about who you are and what you do, and just tremendous for us to be able to listen and learn from you. Thank you.
Anytime you can have me on, anytime. I love what you do for the game of basketball and congratulations and go Rhodey.